If you are looking for perfect artistic gifts for your loved ones when you travel, then check the elegant handcrafted ceramics at the House of Raw. Use the code TSMOSH and save on your first purchase. Details in the show notes of this episode. Hello and welcome to season 3 of Travel Stories with Marsh. So if you love the world around you and you love exploring different landscapes, cultures, cuisines and cities, then you are in the right place because here every week I'll be talking to an incredible travel enthusiast who will take us on a journey around the world by sharing their travel stories. My very special guest on today's episode is someone who I can confirm has the most intoxicating energy. Julie Lewis is an adventurer, an explorer, a warrior, and an author who has in fact released her latest book, Uncharted Waters, earlier this year. Julie is the founder of the first female expedition company in the Middle East. And according to her, travel is living, and therefore her life, of course, is filled with the most enriching experiences. And she joins us here in the studio today to talk about her amazing travel tales from her very exciting life. Julie, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. And there's so much that I want to talk to you about, and I don't know where to begin. But, you know, I am taken back to the time when we met for the first time. Yeah. And there was something very beautiful that you said to me. You said, leave a place. And, you know, we were talking about our love for travel and the world at large, our love for the world at large. And you said to me, leave a place better than you saw it. And that stayed with me. And I was like, wow, that is so fascinating. So talk to me about this love for exploration that you have.
Yes, from being a little girl, my father bought me a globe and we used to play spin the globe. You know, I'd kind of close my eyes, spin it and then put my hand on a spot and then that's where I want to go. And we'd have conversations about that country, what the landscape was, what people ate there, what they wore, etc. I would have wild dreams that evening, you know, that I was this, you know, Amazonian. I was a dog sledder. I was up on a mountain. I was running through forests. So from a very early age, I had this vision of the world and where I wanted to be in the world. And it took some time to make that happen. And then really, you know, that saying, leave a place better than you found it, is very much what I call, you know, it is known as regenerative tourism. So it could just be, as we mentioned, picking up litter, planting a tree, cleaning up a beach area, you know, supporting a community project. So you leave your footprint or your thumbprint on that place and just feel that you've actually done something positively for the environment as opposed to, you know, not leave a positive footprint, basically. Yeah. So that concept of, you know, rejuvenating yourself through travel, but regenerating, leave a place better than you found it.
That is amazing. And also, isn't that so important in the world that we live today, you know, where things are kind of disintegrating and, you know, we are actually facing danger in so many ways. You know, the existing in this world has become difficult. I mean, we don't find pure air, we don't find clean water. So all that, like taking care of the place you live in and your surrounding, is so important. And that's so beautiful what you said. But you know, you are also known as the queen of resilience. You know, there, because the life that you had, I mean, there's so many things that you have faced in your life, from having to flee from Kuwait during the war, from being widowed at a very early age. But amidst all this adversity that was there in your life, you always found that nature and travel healed you. So that's how was it that you found answers in nature and the world in general, or in mountains? Because, you know, you went on to become a mountaineer after that.
That's right. I think, you know, when we go through different transitions in our life or life-altering circumstances, it really kind of stops us in our track. So I found that climbing my first mountain 22 years ago was really an epiphany, a life-altering moment that gave me the courage and the confidence to start my expedition company, to offer more experiences for people to use that as a resource, you know, to say, okay, I feel I need a change. I'm experiencing some challenges. What can I do? And say, here's, take my hand, let's go and climb a mountain, let's go through the forest, let's, you know, ride a boat down a river, just to actually be in nature and connect with wildlife. And you see things very, very differently. And it's really kind of fueling your soul and to be able to say thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, filling your chest with fresh air and hearing the sounds of nature and connection, you know, with wildlife. So powerful. Yeah. So it's saved me, it's healed me, it's transformed me. And I'm so happy to be able to offer those opportunities to others now through the work and through the books and speaking.
That's so fantastic. So you do believe that, you know, everything, the answers are there, out there in nature. Definitely. We just need to go and seek them and find them, but they're there.
Yeah.
And that is so very important in life, you know. So anyway, now coming back to the podcast and our travel stories, tell me, where are you taking us on a journey today?
We are going to go way, way, way down south to the ends of the earth.
Okay.
To Antarctica.
Oh.
Getting to Antarctica is a challenge in itself,
yes,
you know, to go through the dreaded Drake Passage. But then to kind of go into this almost like a portal of stillness and silence and beauty and, you know, so much water, icebergs with all different colors and thousands and thousands of these little penguins that kind of come and say hello. You know, the whales, the seals, the albatross. So it's just a real eye-opener. And it took my breath away. The first time I went in 2012, I took a team of women. And for all of us, you know, we were just the jaw. And it was just, look at this beauty. And you can't hear anything. It's just so silent.
Wow.
And this vastness. And then you just imagine that you're at the bottom of the earth, this tiny, tiny little blip. And everything else, all your worries and all your cares melt away. And you just don't want to sleep because you just want to watch everything and see everything and experience everything. And you're in this whole new world where you're saying, wow, 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 wow. You know, it's like a sensory overload because you're seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, touching, so many different things that your brain becomes neurally alive instead of this autopilot, you know. It's that was a very, very big life-altering trip for me. And I know it's not one of the easiest places to get to, but I feel if you can get there in your lifetime, it truly is heaven on earth.
And you just said something so interesting that you don't want to sleep when you are there. Tell me why, you know, was it so life-altering for you? I mean, apart from the beauty that surrounded you, the nature that surrounded you, what else really captured your mind in such a beautiful way about Antarctica?
I think it was just that vastness of open spaces and not so much interference with buildings. I mean, a few research stations, et cetera. But just to see how life thrives there in such a harsh, unpredictable environment. And we were on a small expedition ship with around 108 passengers. And I'd taken a team of women and a videographer because I thought this is something that you need to capture and have an experience that is so different. And when you're away for a period of time, we were on the ship for 10 days, you start to flow in tune with nature. You know, you're not so hurried. You're just very much present and being. And the slightest sound or the slightest movement in the water, you know, is it a whale? Is it, you know, is it an albatross that's popped up? Or so it just helps you become so much more present and aware of yourself, of others, and the wildlife, but also of nature, that we're not apart from it. We're a part of it. We're this ecosystem. And to be able to experience that.
So would you say that, you know, go to Antarctica only when you're ready to absorb nature in its entirety?
It will call you.
Yeah.
You know, it's some people say,
that is very true. That is very true.
I don't want to go to a cold place. I don't want to go across the, you know, the sea because I heard that it's very, you know, rough crossing
there
and everything.
There is a calling.
But you just know, you know, sometimes you need to go so, so, so far away. So it all depends what's happening in our life.
That's so exciting. I'm like, I have been thinking of this Antarctica trip for a while now.
Yes.
Like, and when you said it will call you,
yes,
I was like, oh my God, you're so right. Because You know, I feel that now. I feel like I want to go there, and I don't like old places. You know, so for me to be to be at a point when I'm saying that, you know, I want to go to, it's huge. You know, I've been all the way to Buenos Aires, but I haven't been to Antarctica. And now I feel I want to do that just because I want to experience nature in its entirety and just be purest. One with nature and its purest form and all of that. Okay, I mean, yeah, Antarctica sounds very exciting, but now let's talk a little bit about your book, Uncharted Waters.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, you've recently released it earlier this year, and you talk about water and you say how, you know, water can solve so many of our problems, but at the same time, it is an element that needs so much attention in today's world. So tell me a little bit more about why you feel the way that you do about water.
We can't live without water. No water, no life. Mm. It gives life to everything, but it can also destroy life. You know, we've seen storms, etc. Yeah. And I think we often take water for granted. We just think that we'll always turn the tap on and we have clean water. Mm. It's the same with air. We always think, you know, we don't think about having to breathe. We just breathe.
Yeah.
And I attempted to swim the English Channel in 2018. Mm-hmm. Didn't quite make it to France, but that's when I really felt the importance of water and taking care of water so it can take care of us. Mm-hmm. So we know that, you know, the ocean is full of things that it shouldn't be full of, that it's impacting the marine life and the, you know, microplastics.
Yeah.
You know, clean water, water sources. It's so, so important. So Uncharted Waters really takes you on a metaphorical journey through different bodies of water and what we can learn from a lake about stillness, silence, reflection. A puddle is playfulness, a waterfall is courage, an ocean of emotions. So really the book is a call for people to fall in love with water again, to realize that no water, no life.
No life. Yeah. And you've been on so many different adventures in your life. But which one do you cherish the most? Which adventure has been the one that has been closest to your heart?
Mm. Everybody needs to go to Nepal at least once in their lifetime.
One, yeah.
Because the beauty of the mountains, the people, the energy, the landscape. So after 18 days of walking through the mountains to the start of Everest expeditions, you know, to get to Everest Base Camp is 5,470 meters. So that's the starting
place
for people to go to 8,800. So walking through those mountains just makes you, again, become in tune with nature. And you let go. It's almost as if you're letting go a lot of things. I don't need to carry that anymore. That's not important anymore. And you see people in the villages, kids in the villages that hardly have anything, that are just so happy and they're smiling.
Yeah.
Namaste. Experiencing that and seeing, you know, the mother goddess of the universe, you know, this is the tallest mountain in the world. And then kind of coming back from that trip, that's when I finally had the courage. So it was life altering to leave the security of my full-time job and start mountain high. So that was definitely one of the kind of outstanding experiences that really changed the trajectory of my career.
That's incredible. Also, you say that, you know, when you travel, it's all about learning new cultures and learning new experiences. But for you, which is that one culture that you have been awestruck by?
I think it would have to be very close between Bhutan and Tibet, with a tendency towards Bhutan, because I was always intrigued by a country that had gross national happiness instead of GDP.
Yeah.
You know, the fourth king in 1974, people
GNH,
thought,
well,
GNH, what is he talking about? So I took a group, we were 18, actually 17 women and one man that came with his wife, to Bhutan in 2017. And the challenge of the trip name was called Jewels of Bhutan, because I really wanted to experience the very special thing. So we hiked to Tiger's Nest. Mm. We did the Dragon's Path. We went to the festivals. And I think that whole, you know, there was so much intrigue about Bhutan because it's not so easy to get there. Mm. And I think it's just this incredible culture that it's like time has stood still.
Yeah.
And the spiritual depth and the landscape and the architecture and their love of nature, that nature is a source of happiness. And the chanting, you know, when you're approaching Tiger's Nest and you can hear hundreds of monks just chanting in that vibration. And it's just incredible and an overload, really. And we had such a beautiful time there.
Mm.
And I've always felt that's kind of stayed with me, you know, being in the monasteries, experiencing that landscape. We planted juniper trees there as well. So that was the kind of regenerative side. Yeah. So that kind of culture I found very intriguing. And I thought, how can you bring that? And then obviously years later, you know, we have Gross National Happiness. Mm-hmm. You have the Happiness Index. Yeah. It's a UN initiative, you know, and we all talk, we have a happiness street here. So it's a kind of had a...
they have SDF when you just land. They have a sustainable development fee when you land. I just came back from Bhutan.
Oh, okay.
So whatever you're saying, it's like I'm resonating. I'm like, yes. And I just, you know, hiked up the tiger's nest. And again, for me, that was life altering in a way. I'm not a hiker. I've never hiked before. And this was my first time. And I hiked with my son.
Oh, beautiful.
And it was a very, very intense moment, you know, for me. Because when I started, I didn't start with... I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go and I've never done this before. I don't know if this is me. And I started, I'm like, shit, I don't know if I can do this, you know? And then you know, I kind of slowed down and then I was, then I kind of got into the groove of it and the guide told me what to do. And then I kind of paced it. We did it and I, you know, and I'm like, wow, I did that. And again, it was a calling.
Yes.
You know, it's something I wanted to do, something I've never done before.
Yeah.
But Bhutan, like you say, it's a different world altogether.
Very much so.
You know, they live very differently. Their ideologies are very different. This respect that they have for nature. And they're so humble.
Beautifully humble.
So the Bhutanese culture is something that you were completely fascinated by.
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, of course, you see so much when you travel around the world. You go through so many different experiences. But has there been an experience in your life that has kind of shaken you, you know, perhaps the time when you had to flee from Kuwait or any other experience, you know, in your travel life as well? Talk to us about that.
I think definitely you just really hit the nail on the head with the Kuwait experience, because when I was 27, I went to work in Kuwait. I was the first female recreation manager at the Holiday Inn Crowne Plaza in Kuwait. Unfortunately, I was there when Iraq invaded back in 1990. I was there and all of a sudden I had a call. I was living in the hotel to say crisis management meeting. We've been, you know, Iraq's taken over. It was huge, you know, and I couldn't call anybody. All the international lines were down. So all of a sudden you find yourself in this environment in a war zone, basically, and thinking, what do I do? So, I mean, 3 weeks later, I was given the opportunity to make a crossing across the desert into Saudi with a group of people.
So you were there in Kuwait for 3 weeks until then?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amidst the war.
Thankfully, our hotel wasn't too much impacted, but making that decision to leave in the middle of the night in a convoy across the desert and then being stopped and held at gunpoint. And then finding a way out of that through conversation, through, you know, a peace offering of food and water kind of thing, and then managing to make it to the border and then eventually to the British Embassy. So that was the kind of the real kind of first adventure, but one that was very
that shook you.
Shook me. Yeah.
Would you go back to Kuwait today?
So I actually did go back to work in Kuwait from 1994. So I left in 1990. I went 94 to 97, and then I moved across to Dubai.
But that's wonderful. I mean, that experience that you went through at the time during the war did not deter you from going back to that place. And that says a lot about, you know, you as so evolved because you understood what that was at the time, but it wasn't the place. So, you know,
definitely.
But that's really amazing. But also now, tell me, you've been around so many places in the world, but there must be something, there must be some hidden gem that, you know, you would like to share with us today.
You know, the first time I went to the Arctic, the top of the earth, you know, was in 2007. And because I had a beautiful Norwegian friend, Janneke, and because she's originally Norwegian, she said, you know, there's a beautiful place called Svalbard or Longyearbyen. And there's thousands of polar bears, thousands of reindeers, seals, and about 1,800 people that live there. And you can go dog sledding, ice caving, these kind of things. And so we went in 2007 and we flew into Oslo and then flew into Svalbard. And I remember there's only about 50 kilometers of road and then the rest is snow. We came into this like explorer's world that we were in this whole new world, basically, where warm clothes, Arctic boots, you know, connection to the dogs, that's the only way that you could travel. And it was 24 hours daylight. So you had to pull down these dark blinds because you'd still think it's, you know, 7-8 o'clock and it's actually 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
But it was just this beauty of this rugged earthiness of the place, but then having beautiful meals. You know, it seemed like you'd expect, you know, to have kind of expedition stir meals or something, but it was just beautiful. And being in that place and then staying at the dog yard in a trapper's hut, like a game, and we were all in a circle and sleeping bags, sleeping on reindeer skins just with a fire in the middle. And people think, oh gosh, that must have been awful. But it was very, very exciting. You felt like a real adventurer and explorer.
Oh, yes. So would you say Svalbard is like a hidden gem in a way?
I think it is. Yeah. You know, it's quite expensive to go there because obviously they get supplies from the mainland and it's seasonal and it's not everybody's idea of a vacation.
Right.
You know, you know, there's a museum there. There's the there's some beautiful artwork there. Again, it's what you call to.
Yeah.
You know, some people say, I want to go and learn how to cook Thai food in Thailand and meditate with monks. That's my idea of bliss. Mm. Other people say, no, I want to be really cold and I want to be out on a boat and I want to go ice fishing, all of these things.
But you, Svalbard really came out as a gem.
Yeah, I have been 10 times. Yeah. So that says a lot because most places I've been to two or three times.
I was just, my next question was going to be 10 times. Okay,
yes.
10 times in Svalbard. But is that also your favorite destination?
It was very much, I felt at home there. You know, it's very rare I would go somewhere 10 times, really. And so I've definitely had my fix as Svalbard.
Wow.
Would I go back again in a heartbeat?
Wow.
And I know that there's so many other beautiful places on the planet.
I have been wanting to go to Svalbard for the longest time, and I know who to ask for all the tips.
Where to go, what to do, when to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, Julie, we spoke about so much, about different parts of the world, your favorite destination, hidden gem. But, you know, I know that, you know, nature and the world at large is so important to you and the elements of nature are so important to you. So what would you say that we need to do for responsible travel?
It's that kind of leave no trace, isn't it? Only footprints. And for myself,
because we
now,
talk about it, but do we do enough?
Do we do it? Yes, And I think there is a lot more conscious travel about, you know, how we get there, what services we use. Are we supporting the local community instead of going with big chains?
Yeah.
You know, are we giving back into the community, buying local products, buying arts and crafts and souvenirs that are actually made there, not imported in from anywhere else? Checking with hotels, guest houses, what are your sustainable practices? Are you a throwaway kind of organization or are you, you know, glass bottles for water, washing the towels? I mean, I think it's just important. This is this regenerative, eco-sustainable tourism to make sure that it's not just greenwashing, that, you know, that yes, we do. We do what we say we're going to do, and we're very conscious, making sure that we're very aware. You know, even something as simple as asking people if you mind to have their picture taken, because that to me is responsible tourism, not just taking pictures of everything when it is maybe not appropriate. You know, picking up litter, you know, helping the community. So there's so many different things, you know, the products, the services. Do you know, are they being conscious and responsible? Otherwise, I don't want to work with them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I'm with you. And that is why, I mean, I thought this question was so important because we don't do enough and say enough and talk enough. And the conversations are happening in today's world, but it's not enough. It's up to everybody to do what they want to do. But I think it's important that we do something little, something small in our own way.
Definitely. If we want to keep traveling to these places.
If we want the world to exist.
Yes,
you know,
there's no planet B, as everybody keeps saying. No, there's no plan B.
So, you know, coming back more about travel in the world, which is that one place that you would highly recommend that people should go in 2024?
Many years ago, I took a small group of clients to Japan. And again, I go greasy because I, you know, I can literally, when I say the country, I go right back to that place. And I, Kyoto, it was just beautiful. And cherry blossoms, the Zen gardens, the geisha, the culture, the food, the Japanese philosophy, you know, so beautiful. And it just all seemed to be there, you know, in that landscape. So there's this intrigue about Japan and about Japanese philosophy and food and culture, because you've got Tokyo, and but then you've got Kyoto, and you've got Mount Fuji, and then you've got these beautiful lakes. So it's a, it's definitely a place of contrast. But I found Kyoto was a beautiful, beautiful experience, you know, to be having the matcha tea with the geisha, and how spiritual experience, how important that process, that ceremony was.
You and have then, to be lucky to be able to do that, because, you know, even spotting a geisha in today's world is is considered to be lucky. If you know,
we were very lucky. Yeah. We had very good guides.
I always say Japan has a soul. You know, it has a soul because the people are so nice. I mean, you know,
they're so nice.
So, yeah, it's a, Japan is definitely a country I think everyone should visit. But what is next on your bucket list? What are you looking forward to next in travel?
Yeah, the book has really opened up a whole new world to me, because looking at water all around the world, whether it's oceans, lakes, rivers, waterfalls, streams, etc. So I'm really now looking at places that will offer the opportunity to be in, on, around, or maybe underwater, and connecting with whales and dolphins, marine life. So I'm looking at places like the Azores. I'm looking at sailing trips, coastal walks. Yeah, just looking at different places now. So lots of ideas that are brewing.
Well, that's wonderful. And I hope you keep flowing.
Yes.
Like your book. Like and water. I hope the book does very well. And I hope you get to go to all these amazing places, and you get to swim and flow along with the book in the waters that you want to, in different shores and, you know, places. But this was so nice. Thank you so much, Julie.
Thank you.
Really, really appreciate this entire conversation. And yeah, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in today. I hope our conversations have fueled your imagination and inspired you to explore the world in new and exciting ways. Please don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. And until the next time, keep traveling and stay safe.